New Horizons is sponsored in part by the Idaho Humanities Council, deepening understanding of human experience by connecting people with ideas.
Today on New Horizons, David Grand, author of The Lost City of Z, A Tale of Deadly Obsession in the Amazon.
The Amazon Basin is about the size of the continental United States. So they needed someone to come in and map it, and they recruited this guy, Fawcett. He came in and began to explore it and map these areas. Ever since the first conquistadors had arrived in South America, they heard rumors of this great ancient civilization that was somewhere in the jungle. He was really the last of the kind of great Victorian explorers who would venture into these blank spots on the map, pretty much little more than a machete and almost a divine sense of purpose.
I'm Bob Kustra, president of Boise State University. Welcome to New Horizons. In 1925, former spy and acclaimed British explorer Percy Harrison Fawcett walked into the Amazon rainforest in search of the fabled lost city of El Dorado and disappeared. In the decades that followed, scores of adventurers tried and failed to retrace his steps. Many died. Others faced harrowing encounters with native tribes, poisoned arrows, cannibalism, dense rainforest, flesh-eating piranhas, and massive pythons. None solved what had come to be known as the greatest exploration mystery of the 20th century. Stumbling across the tale years later, New Yorker staff writer David Grand became captivated by Fawcett's story and determined to discover his fate. A city boy with no previous camping experience, he outfitted himself for the journey of a lifetime and set off into the unknown. His book, The Lost City of Z, A Tale of Deadly Obsession in the Amazon, offers a thrilling recount of his adventures. The Lost City of Z was a number one New York Times bestseller and has been translated into more than 24 languages, shortlisted for the Samuel Johnson Prize. The book was chosen as one of the best books of 2009 by the New York Times, the Washington Post, Entertainment Weekly, Bloomberg, Publishers Weekly, and the Christian Science Monitor. Mr. Grand also is the author of The Devil and Sherlock Holmes, Tales of Murder, Madness, and Obsession. And today he joins us by phone from New York City. David Grand, welcome to New Horizons.
No, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, David, congratulations on the book. It's been a great success, and the new vintage edition has come out just not too long ago, so we certainly see the book here in our bookstores in Boise, and we're just delighted to have a few minutes to talk with you. The subtitle of this book could almost be A Tale of Two Obsessions, One Deadly and One Almost Deadly, to the extent that it was Percy Fawcett, who you're talking about here in this book, but your own journey into the Amazon was maybe we shouldn't call it an obsession, but you were focused. You were going to get there and find out what's going on. Let's start with the basics. Percy Fawcett, who was this guy and what was he up to?
He was really the last of the kind of great Victorian and Edwardian explorers, these people who would venture into these blank spots on the map with pretty much little more than a machete and almost a divine sense of purpose. And he had started exploring the Amazon in 1906. And at that point, really the era of exploration was coming largely to an end in terms of territorial exploration. But the Amazon remained the last large blank space. And just to give the listener some sense, the Amazon Basin is about the size of the continental United States. And back then, it was really an area as mysterious as the dark side of the moon. And it was so unexplored that the countries in South America didn't even know where their borders were in the Amazon. So they needed someone to come in and map it. And they recruited this guy, Fawcett, who had trained at the Royal Geographical Society as an explorer, was tough as nails. He came in and for the next several years began to explore it and map these areas. And over the next two decades, he continued to explore and map the Amazon basin. He was known as the Livingston of the Amazon. And it was during these explorations that he began to develop his very radical theory that went against all the conventional wisdom of the time and for centuries, that the Amazon may have contained this great, complex, ancient civilization, which he dubbed the City of Z.
Was Fawcett the inspiration for the Indiana Jones novel?
He is often said to be one of the inspirations for Indiana Jones. I never was able to confirm directly from Spielberg if he was based on it, but it seems that he was, and there is a novel, in fact, an Indiana Jones novel tied into the movie where Fawcett appears. So there seems to be this, certainly a consciousness, an awareness of Fawcett.
I was surprised to see that one of the people he attempted to get on one of his Amazon visits was none other than T.E. Lawrence, better known as Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, that's right. And that was for his final expedition. In 1925, Fawcett finally set out to look for this place, the city of Z. And T.E. Lawrence wanted to go with him, but Fawcett had had a difficult experience earlier with a very famous explorer who had a large ego, someone who had gone with Shackleton. And so he was reluctant to go with Lawrence, and he took with him on his final expedition only two people, his son, his older son Jack, and Jack's best friend Raleigh Rimel. And in 1925, they set off to find this great city, and then they vanished without a trace.
Jack was really his father's son, wasn't he?
Oh, very much so. I mean, Jack worshipped his father, and his father really worshipped Jack. And, you know, one of the hardest things in writing the book that I had to kind of wrestle with was Fawcett's decision to take Jack with him, to try to understand that, because as much as Jack was strong and incredibly athletic, he was a great cricket player, he really had no exploring experience. And Raleigh Rimel had even less conditioning for such a journey. And it reflected to some extent that decision, a tinge of madness in Fawcett, that he was so consumed with his obsession by the end that he was willing to take his son with him on a journey that was, even he acknowledged, may have been suicidal.
And these early explorers to the Amazon encountered some horrifying maladies, did they not?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was kind of shocked because, you know, when I often think of explorers, you know, you think of some of the Arctic explorers, what they went through, or desert explorers. But these Amazon explorers were under constant siege, and it wasn't just the large predators. I mean, there was the kind of predators you think of, like poison dart frogs or anacondas or poisonous snakes. But it was really, and what was so deadly to these guys, and it would just wipe out their expeditions, was the invisible pests. And many of them transported deadly diseases, bone crusher fever, malaria, yellow fever, elephantiasis. And Fawcett would usually take an expedition. He was counterintuitive. He took small expeditions, but he would take about a dozen men, and usually half of them on his expeditions would die of disease, and he would often describe burying them along the banks of the rivers and marking their graves with a little more than a few twigs.
Now, the indigenous tribes, I want to talk about those in a moment, but while we're on this subject of these diseases, were the indigenous tribes just genetically immune to these?
I think they got knocked off to some degree by them, and but they also were much more accustomed to the conditions and had developed ways of living, whether it be using body paints that probably provided some resistance to some of the bugs, to the way they designed their homes that kept out the mosquitoes. So they had really come up, like anybody who lives in a certain environment, they had come up with ingenious ways to cope with it and to live within it. And they had, for example, learned to use many of the plants around them to help combat many of the diseases.
Let's talk about the city of Z. How prevalent were rumors of El Dorado, the city of gold, and why did Fawcett, was it Fawcett's naming of Z? Because they are, it was, or it does refer to El Dorado, the city of gold, doesn't it not?
Yes. I mean, ever since the first conquistadors had arrived in South America in the early 1500s, they heard rumors from the Native Americans and the Indians of this great ancient civilization that was somewhere in the jungle, which was said to be so plentiful in gold that the inhabitants literally ground gold into powder, and they would anoint their bodies and be shining from the head to the toe in the sun. And El Dorado literally means the gilded man. And the conquistadors, of course, lusting after gold, quickly headed over the Andes. And the first expedition went in the 1530s, and they took with them about 4,000 men. And about almost all of them died of disease and starvation. Only a handful made it back and returned. And expeditions continued for a couple centuries to search for El Dorado, and they too died or were wiped out. Some of them descended into cannibalism, eating their own in order to survive. And it was pretty much after this toll of death and suffering that was worthy and reminiscent of anything that Joseph Conrad had ever written that most people concluded El Dorado was no more than a delusion. And by Fawcett's day and in the 20th century, most modern archaeologists had concluded that the Amazon was a counterfeit paradise, that despite all its flora and fauna, it was inimitable to human life. And they believed this not just because of the mosquitoes and the predators, they believed this that because of the all the different plants competing for nutrients in the soil, and because of flooding, that the soil was drained of nutrients. And so you couldn't really grow agriculture, and without having a large food staple, you couldn't have a large population, and thus without a large population, you couldn't have a complex civilization. So that was the prevailing notion, but Fawcett began to piece together clues that led him to believe that this notion of the Amazon was gravely mistaken.
Well, do you think he succeeded? I mean, I know he didn't come out, but I mean to the extent.
So when he was doing these expeditions, first of all, he would encounter many of these tribes that had never before seen white men. And the further he went away from where the tribes had made contact with Westerners, he discovered the healthier they were. They were not wiped out by disease, and the larger their populations were. He was also struck by the complexity of their culture and by the fact that they had come up with ingenious ways to grow food. They would often use the floodplains, for example, which were richer in nutrients. And he also began to find, scattered throughout the jungle, bits of pottery that looked very old and very refined. Now, this was before carbon dating, but it looked very old, it looked very refined. Once, when he was in the Bolivian floodplains, he was climbing these large earth mounds, and when he got to the top, he saw something sticking out. He bent down and he picked it up, and sure enough, it was a shard of pottery. And everywhere he scratched, he wrote in his diaries, he found these shards. And that wasn't all. When he looked out between these large earth mounds, he saw what he thought connecting them, buried underneath the jungle floor, were these causeways. And so there were clues like this that led him to reach his theory. And the remarkable thing is that even though Fawcett disappeared and was never seen again, and many people who searched for him disappeared and were never seen again, archaeologists today, using kind of technology that Fawcett could never have imagined, things like satellite imagery, ground-penetrating radar, have indeed found evidence of ancient complex civilizations. In the very area where Fawcett disappeared, in the Xingu area, in the southern basin of the Amazon, an archaeologist from the University of Florida, Michael Heckenberger, he has found evidence of 20 pre-Columbian settlements that date between roughly 600, 700 AD up to about 1500. And sure enough, these settlements were connected by causeways. And other archaeologists are continuing to find massive ruins and evidence of ancient human habitations in the jungle.
One of the things that shocked me in reading your book, I think you said that there were like 60 tribes in the Amazon today, or at the writing of your book, that have had no contact with the outside world whatsoever?
That's right. There are in the Brazilian Amazon alone, the Brazilian government estimated that there are about 60 tribes that remain uncontacted. Now, did one member at one point have a fleeting contact? Possibly, but they have retreated and have had no formal or established contact with the outside world. People don't know what their languages are. They don't know exactly where they came from, what their history are. Just a couple years ago, members of a nomadic tribe in the Colombian Amazon emerged and said they were ready to join the modern world, but they were unaware that Colombia was a country, and they asked if the plains overhead were on invisible highways.
That is absolutely amazing. Does the Brazilian government do anything to attract the interest of these tribes in coming out, or?
Well, it's funny. Its approach has changed over time. I mean, it has done a better job, in fact, of trying to protect them in recent years, and has actually has an agency that has tried, in many ways, not to at least force contact. But for many, many years, they did try to make contact. and made contact with many of the tribes, for example, in the area where Fawcett disappeared. And those contacts were sometimes successful and sometimes disastrous in terms of the implications for the native inhabitants.
You're listening to David Grand. He is the author of The Lost City of Z, A Tale of Deadly Obsession in the Amazon. Let's talk for a moment about Fawcett's disappearance. What's the most likely theory on what happened to him, his son, and his son's friend?
Well, there were many theories. I mean, one of the things that happened was because Fawcett had, he really was almost indestructible. I mean, he was such an indomitable explorer that people in his day speculated, and there were rumors that he was immune to death, and he could outwalk and outhike almost any other explorer. And so at the time when he disappeared, it was almost unfathomable to people that he may have perished. And all sorts of rumors and theories emerged. Were they being held captive by a tribe, which sometimes happened? Did they find Z and they were too entranced to return? Were they wounded? Were they sick? Were they starving? Based on about 3 years of research and various clues, it seems pretty clear that they were likely killed by a tribe, most likely the Shivanti tribe, near the River of Death. And there are kind of various reasons, circumstantial reasons, to reach that conclusion, but I'm pretty convinced it is the right one. One of the things I discovered when I went into the Amazon on my own trip was that one of the tribes in the area had an oral history. They don't keep written records, but they pass down these oral histories, which are almost like these epic poems. And in that epic poem, they described their encounter with Fawcett because he was among the first white men they had ever seen. And that oral history really gives strong indications that they were killed by the Indians just to the east of them, which would have been the Shivantes.
Mm-hmm. And can we assume that the Indians are, at that time especially, very, very nervous about outsiders, given the fact that outsiders seem to come in and pass along diseases that kill them? So is that likely the reason why Fawcett or any explorer would get knocked off by these natives?
Yes. I mean, during Fawcett's day, exploration became extremely perilous in the Amazon because it was the era of the rubber Amazon boom in particular, and rubber became in great demand because of the development of tires on automobiles and also bicycles. But rubber was very hard to tap, and rubber barons would send in their men, and they would either enslave the Indians as workers or massacre them if they impeded their progress. Mm-hmm. And so many of the tribes during Fawcett's era quickly retreated into the jungle and resisted and repelled any outsiders who entered the area. The tribe in particular where Fawcett was likely killed by had actually been made contact with by the Brazilian government a few decades earlier, and they had been moved into a camp where they were horribly mistreated. Many of their members died, and they soon left that camp, retreated back into the jungle by the River of Death, as it was known, and repelled anyone who entered that area, which is why the river became known as the River of Death. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about your expedition. As I said, the almost deadly obsession, to the extent that I think your wife deserves the title the most understanding wife of the decade.
I have a very good wife. It's true. I have a very good wife.
Because you go to her
every day.
Yeah, you go to her and you tell her, I'm going on this expedition. I'm going to try to find out what happened to Percy Fawcett. And she says, well, what happened to him? Well, he didn't come out, and nor did many explorers. And you still are on your way on this trip. The first thing you have to do is find a guide, I guess. Find someone. How do you find, I mean, what did you know at that point about how you were going to enter the Amazon?
Well, it certainly presented obstacles. You know, I've been reporting and chasing stories now. I'm getting older, so I've been doing this for, you know, close to 20 years. And but this really presented obstacles and challenges like none I had ever encountered before. Now, the area where I wanted to go, and what's important for listeners to understand is that parties had tried to solve the mystery of what happened to Fawcett or what happened to Z for decades. And many of those parties disappeared. Many of them died from disease and starvation. Parties continued to go up into the present. In 1996, a large Brazilian expedition had gone, and they were kidnapped by a tribe and held for many days before finally escaping. And so this trip was daunting in many ways. And the area where Fawcett went and disappeared in the Xingu area is now a reservation, which is about the size of Belgium, and it's one of the largest areas of territory on the planet that remains under indigenous control. And because of the bloody history of the contact, because people still go into these areas and try to cut down the trees or look for minerals, you can't just wander onto these territories. They're like countries within a country. So the first thing, as you mentioned, I needed to do was to find a guide. Now, when I first called guides down there and kind of spoke to them what I wanted to do, they all said they were muito ocupado, which seemed like a polite way of saying basically I was out of my mind. But I did eventually find a guide who was a professional samba dancer. He was very good at it. The good thing about him was he had once worked for one of the agencies that was set up to protect the Indians, and he could help us make contact with the tribes in the area so we could enter their territory peaceably and not have troubles.
What? For some reason, being a professional samba dancer doesn't give me great confidence about what kind of a guide this guy is.
he turned out to be a pretty good guide, although at one point we did get separated, and I kind of ended up on my own, which was probably the low point of my journey.
I remember reading about that. Tell us, how long were you on your own?
Well, probably an afternoon. We got separated. We were pushing on, and we had too much cargo at that point, and Paolo had set out to try to find and make contact with the Kwikuru Indians and headed down a path, and he didn't come back. And eventually, I had to try to figure out what to do, so I set out and tried to follow the path, but the path slowly got submerged. There's a lot of flooding in that area, and I ended up in a swamp, basically turning around in circles. And, you know, I am not cut out for these kind of trips. I'm an urban person. I'm not a camper. Unfortunately, I'm horribly out of shape. And thankfully, I eventually some young Indians in the area found me and basically saved me. But it was an important moment to me because it gave me. I remember there was a point where when I was lost, I began to curse Fawcett. I just cursed him for his son and for Raleigh Rhyme and all the people who had gone in pursuit and disappeared. And I cursed him for myself. Of course, I was blaming him for my own decisions. But it gave me some understanding, not just what Fawcett went through in that moment, but it also gave me a sense of the nature of obsession and how these obsessions can produce wonderful discoveries, but they can really have deadly consequences. And I really realized that in that moment. And I had a little boy at the time, and I thought of my boy, and I thought of my wife, and it made me aware of some of the decisions I had done, and also that Fawcett had done, and taking his son with him and putting his son's life at risk, and the ramification that those decisions have.
Now, David, you did tell me before the show that you're currently working on an article for The New Yorker in Guatemala. Are you going to be a little safer there?
The thing about me is I stumble into stories that become dangerous where I don't expect them to be. And to be honest, when I started on this story in Guatemala, I didn't realize that Guatemala was very dangerous. It turns out that Guatemala is, or at least as of 2008, was the third most violent country in the world. So it has its dangers, but it's not quite like trekking through the jungle.
That's right. Back to the jungle. That jungle that you discovered in 2008 or whenever it was far different, or at least somewhat different from what Fawcett discovered. Tell us a little bit about the modern day Amazon and what you saw, some of the changes that have taken place.
One of the most amazing things about the trip was I brought Fawcett's letters and diaries with me, partly because I was following his trail, but also his descriptions of where he had gone. And I even had a lot of Fawcett's letters and dispatches from his final trip, even though he disappeared, because he had given these dispatches to various Indian runners who would carry them out of the jungle. So I had a lot of his last descriptions of his trip, and I would be reading about how hard it was for him hacking through the jungle, how it would take them days to make progress, how Raleigh Rhyme was already sick. And in some of these parts, I would be looking out, and there was literally nothing there. There was no jungle. It looked like Nebraska. It was just flat plains.
Wow.
And the areas have been deforested and been turned into soybean farms. And it really wasn't until I entered into the Xingu area, which was under indigenous control, where the jungle really resumed. And one of the things you're seeing in the Amazon is that it's actually the areas under indigenous control where the forests are being preserved and the areas around them are being deforested. And even since my trip, because I look at satellite imagery, there is less forest in some of these areas in just 3 years since I've come back.
Oh, that is so sad. Now, Brad Pitt was working on a movie version of this book. What's the latest on, has he dropped that, or
I've learned getting through Hollywood is a little like getting through the jungle, and you never quite know what's happening or what's coming. But they are still working on it, and it is still Brad Pitt's production company. And whether he will play Fawcett is the question that's still a little bit unclear to me. But they are still developing it and have a terrific script, and they have a great director, this guy named James Gray. So it's still in the works, and I'm still hopeful that sometime next year, hopefully, they'll be able to start shooting.
And they usually give bit parts to authors in movies like that, so make sure you get yourself in that film somewhere.
hopefully it can be a part at a hotel, kicked back by the pool. I've done my part.
There you go. So will we get a definitive answer someday to what happened to Fawcett?
I don't know if we will get too much further than I got. There may be one oral history from one of the Indians that may emerge, and I've actually been still trying to pursue that to see if I can get an oral history from the group that I believe he was killed by. I don't think we will find his bones. It would be very unlikely. Things decompose in the jungle very quickly because of the humidity. I suppose you might find a belt buckle or a bullet, but given the vastness of the jungle area, I think it's unlikely. So I think we probably won't get much past the circumstantial case.
He left behind a wife and family, as I remember it. What happened to them over the years? Were there many years left in his wife's life anyway after he disappeared?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, when you begin these projects, you don't always know what you will find or what characters will kind of appear and become interesting. And I really began researching this story about Fawcett. And his family and his wife really became, to me, some of the most interesting characters. He was married to this woman named Nina, who was very devoted to him, had her own ambitions, but they were really hamstrung because she lived in the Victorian era, in the Edwardian era. She kind of sublimated a lot of her ambitions into Fawcett, really helped him in every which way, both promoting his legend and in all his endeavors. But she had an incredibly tough and difficult life because he would set out on these expeditions. He would be gone for 2 years at a time, and she would be left home taking care of the kids. He pretty much bankrupted the family on his expeditions with his obsession. And then after he disappeared in 1925, she refused to believe that her husband had died or that she had agreed or at all was complicit in the decision to send her son Jack off in the jungle with him. And she maintained from 1925 all the way up until about 1953 when she died, the strong, undying belief that he and her son were still alive. She even tried to organize expeditions, and towards the very end of her life, she was even willing to go herself, even though she knew it meant certain death. Mm-hmm. Fawcett also left behind another son, a younger son, and a daughter, and the younger son in the 1950s did, in fact, go on an expedition trying to see if he could find evidence. By that time, he believed his father was dead, but he still held out hope that his brother, Jack, might still be alive.
Did he make it back?
He did make it back. Mm-hmm.
Well, we've run out of time, David, but I want to thank you so much for writing The Lost City of Z and, of course, for being on the show. And most importantly, be safe in Guatemala.
Thanks.
Our guest today is...
on the show. It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Our guest today was David Grand, The Lost City of Z. Next week, David Friedman, author of Wrong, Why Experts Keep Failing Us and How to Know When Not to Trust Them. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones, research by Kathleen Tuck. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to the people who help shape our world in both the Treasure Valley and beyond on New Horizons.